X-29. Number 3B.
Love reduces all the works of evil to animal magnetism and excludes it as a factor in the practice of Christian Science. Why is it not a factor? Because it is the Antichrist, which does not come from God, but from the power of imagination, mind, because it is a mere negation of God, spirit. Its nature is sinful, soul, and always works evil, principle, with the sole aim of killing, life, and it is therefore always wrong and cannot be justified, truth. Hence, God does not sanction it, love. Let me put the substance of this whole chapter in yet another way. Here Mrs. Eddy makes it quite plain that whatever does not come from the divine source is animal or evil. This means that whatever does not come from mind is only imaginary, that whatever does not come from spirit has no reality, that whatever does not come from soul must be accounted sin, that whatever does not come from principle works out the purposes of evil, that whatever does not come from life is mortal, that whatever does not come from truth is erroneous, and that whatever does not come from love is not acceptable to God. You see, through these seven subjects, we have a clear ordered definition of animal magnetism. The whole chapter unmasks the claims of the Antichrist and exposes their nothingness. Such a statement as this is necessary, for Christian Science not only has to teach the somethingness of truth, but with it also the nothingness of error, the nothingness of the Antichrist, or animal magnetism. Both statements are necessary for a full and correct exposition in metaphysics. We need not only a statement of the Christ, but also a statement of the Antichrist. Not only a statement of the positive, but also of the negative. Because knowing why the negative is negative is something very positive. This chapter presents a statement of the nothingness of the Antichrist, and so by inversion depicts the standpoint of the Christ reflecting the Word. Now, as evil is but a counterfeit and not a counterfact of truth, evil by inversion must hint at truth. Therefore, after regarding the nothingness of error in this chapter, I myself like to fill my thought with the somethingness of truth. I like to compensate the statements of the Antichrist with the statements of the Christ by reversing all the subjects we have just been considering. In this way, I handle animal magnetism. I begin to realize the power of the Christ constantly coming to me. How? First, I see that I can stand only under the influence of the divine mind, under the influence of ideas, mind. Then I see that only that which is positive and real can manifest itself to me and in me, spirit. I feel that there is nothing else going on but soul and its sinlessness. And so I realize that soul's infinite flow of blessings frees me from sin, subtlety, cruelty, despotism, and so on, soul. I know also that God is principle, and that Christ works out only the maximum of good for me and you and everybody, principle. I know that I stand under the constant practice of the divine principle, and that this practice of principle is of the nature of life, that it always resuscitates, invigorates, and exalts my very being, life, Then I know that truth establishes in me all that is right and true and just, and affirms in me the true standard of manhood, truth. Lastly, I have a wonderful sense that God is always sanctioning my true manhood and never knows me as anything else but as his blessed child, love. Uncovering the nothingness of evil, animal magnetism unmasked, does not leave the student with a sense of horror before an unknown and unseen subtle power, but conveys to him the calm sense that there is but one influence ever flowing to him, the influence of the infinite God, good. Science, theology, medicine. After giving us an analysis of the nature and operation of the Antichrist, after having cleared and freed thought from the belief of there being more than one power at work, Mrs. Eddy, in the chapter Science, Theology, Medicine, then goes on to present the workings of the Christ. She describes the revelation of the Christ and what this true Christ does. You will see that it is always in the sense of God revealing himself to men. In reading this chapter through, we cannot help noticing how often in the text we find the trend from God to man. In the first four chapters, thought was being gently led step by step in its approach to God. But here we have the opposite direction of God coming to man. The office of the Christ, as God's revelation to you and me, is now in focus. For instance, when writing about her discovery of the Christ science, Mrs. Eddy asked, "Whence came to me this heavenly conviction?" A conviction antagonistic to the testimony of the physical senses. Science and Health, 108, 1-2. The standpoint is that of the Christ. Whence came to me this heavenly conviction? According to St. Paul, she says, it was the gift of the grace of God given unto me by the effectual working of his power. Science and Health, 108, 3-4. It was the grace of God given unto her. Further, we find this statement, the revelation of truth in the understanding came to me gradually and apparently through divine power. Science and Health, 109, 22-24. It came to her. There are many more examples in this chapter stressing this new attitude of the Christ, this new attitude of God revealing himself to you and me and everybody. Mrs. Eddy starts this chapter by stating that in the year 1866, she had a revelation and discovered the Christ science. We may be puzzled why she does not start her whole textbook with this statement and with this particular chapter. Usually, when people discover something new and write about it, they give a broad statement of their discovery right at the beginning and then go on to expound it. This is exactly what Mrs. Eddy did do in 1891 when she first wrote the substance of this chapter. At that time and up to 1902, this chapter was the first chapter in the textbook. But in 1902, Mrs. Eddy changed the order of the chapters and put science, theology, medicine as the sixth chapter, and there it has remained. You may wonder why she did so, and there is a very logical explanation for it the moment one perceives the scientific order of the structure of the textbook. If you read the next sentence in the introductory paragraph, it will give you a clue. God had been graciously preparing me during many years for the reception of this final revelation of the absolute divine principle of scientific mental healing. Science and Health 107, 3-6. This sentence shows very clearly that revelation does not come out of the blue, so to speak, but it necessitates a preparatory period during which thought is made ready and receptive for it. Now, does this not put in a few words what the textbook has been doing to us through the preceding chapters? Do not these chapters graciously prepare the student in thought and life to become receptive for the revelations of the Christ? Interestingly enough, the different stages in Mrs. Eddy's life actually indicate such a journey through the first five chapters before the light of truth broke upon her thought in 1866. She says herself that the revelation of truth came to her gradually. From her biography, we know that the first outstanding feature in her life was that she retired 7 times a day to pray. Hence, her way of spiritual life began with prayer, and the textbook likewise begins with prayer. When the day came for her to be admitted as a member of the Congregational Church, we are told that Mary took a firm stand against its doctrine of a final judgment day, predestination, and the eternal banishment of unbelievers. The thought of universal salvation had already dawned on her, and did she not at that point lay in thought and life the very foundation for her second chapter, Atonement and Eucharist? We know further that in spite of insurmountable difficulties, Mrs. Eddy tried everything to render her married life happy and lasting. In addition, through her journalistic and social work, she did her best to strike a higher tone for society. This is the tone we find in marriage. When in the middle of the last century, spiritualism with its spirit circles was in vogue in New England, Mrs. Eddy vigorously repudiated its theories and practices through her lectures and writings. The chapter, Christian Science versus Spiritualism, which is the next step, does the same. The parallel is most striking, is it not? Next, Mrs. Eddy became interested in Quimbyism, then a modern form of mesmerism and hypnotism. But she soon realized the abysmal difference between divine mind and mortal mind, and could foresee the absolute necessity of basing healing on divine mind only, and never on mortal mind. In other words, she saw through the practice of animal magnetism, and later on laid it bare in her chapter, Animal Magnetism Unmet. Now, all these experiences had been but one big preparation, leavening the whole of her life, until in 1866, she was what I would call divinely receptive for her final revelation of the absolute divine principle of scientific mental healing, Science and Health 107, 5-6, which she expounds in the present chapter, Science, Theology, Medicine. Many people long to have revelations, long to make spiritual discoveries, and they wonder why it happens to some people but not to them. Usually they conclude that revelation must be something that comes only to a chosen few. Of course, that is nonsense. Revelation is something that comes to every one of us when we are prepared and have been made ready to receive it by living through the first five chapters of the textbook. As we can see from the introductory paragraphs to this chapter, Revelation is preceded by human experiences, which show the falsity of all material things, and by immortal cravings, the price of learning love. See Science and Health 108:5-11. Without that, there is no revelation. Without seeking, there is no finding. Revelation is not a haphazard happening. Revelation is a matter of consciousness. A consciousness made receptive for the inflow of truth. When revelation breaks on thought, there is no mistaking it. It just goes bang in one's thought. Nothing has to be thought out or argued out. It comes with such certainty and conviction that no one on earth and no difficulty whatever can make one waver or shift from it. Revelation is Emmanuel, God with us. There is another wonderful point about Mrs. Eddy's revelation. She states, "My conclusions were reached by allowing the evidence of this revelation to multiply with mathematical certainty." Science and Health 108:12-13. Now, the fact that Mrs. Eddy drew scientific conclusions from her revelation really shows her greatness. Her healing from a fatal injury was in itself nothing extraordinary. After all, since the days of Jesus and throughout the centuries, many spiritual healings and marvels have taken place through a deep trust and faith in God. Many people have been healed by reading the Bible. During the war, many people were miraculously saved in desperate conditions. But did any of them ever go to the extent of drawing scientific conclusion from such incidents? They may have felt deeply grateful, but nothing more. Mrs. Eddy, however, was not satisfied with that. She drew scientific conclusions. She reasoned that if a spiritual healing could take place once, then there was probably a principle behind it. And that if there was a principle behind it, one could learn it and consequently apply it and prove it in every case. To do such a thing was and still is considered heretical and blasphemous by old theology, yet Mrs. Eddy did it. I think it needed a woman to have a mind so unprejudiced as to venture such unheard-of heights of reasoning. Thank goodness there are heretics. They break new ground and stimulate thought. By this time, one is naturally more than anxious to find what Mrs. Eddy discovered, and what she tells us is expressed with such force and breath that the great impetus of the Christ can be felt immediately. It gives one an overwhelming sense of the allness of God, and of his power to translate himself to us. It is as if Mrs. Eddy has now brought us to the point where she can pour out to us the essence of her revelation, the revelation of what God is and how he translates himself to consciousness as mind, as spirit, as soul, as principle, as life, as truth, which illustrates his nature to be love. She floods the thought of the reader with the Christ translation, and she does this through the following subjects. Science. The first subject reveals that God is mind, and that the divine mind translates mortal mind out of itself back into the metaphysics of the one mind. Mind. What Mrs. Eddy discovered is the fact that the divine mind is the all mind, the only mind, and that mortal mind, therefore, is not. This includes the fact that matter, which is but the subjective state of mortal mind, is also not. Here is shown that God is mind. and in its office of the Christ, this mind translates mortal mind out of itself back into the consciousness that there is only one mind, and that this one mind is the all mind. That mind is all in all. Mortal mind is therefore unreal. It is nothing more than a solecism in language. The well-known scientific translation of immortal mind and scientific translation of mortal mind climax this subject. There we find the statement that in the third degree mortal mind disappears, that God and his idea is all-inclusive, and that the grand point in metaphysics is to crown the divine mind as the only Messiah. The second subject reveals that God is spirit, and that spirit leavens material beliefs and thus translates matter back into spirit. Spirit. Understanding the onlyness of spirit is the new language, the language of spirit. Jesus talked this language through his mighty, crowning, unparalleled, and triumphant exit from the flesh. Science and Health 117:21-23. Mrs. Eddy shows that this language of spirit is the leaven which leavens every material belief until the whole of mortal and material thought is translated back into spirit. Then God, spirit, and nature is one. Then we perceive nature as spiritual and good, and no longer as material and evil. God is spirit, and in its office of the Christ, spirit translates dualism back into the onlyness and oneness of spirit, of natural good. The third subject reveals that God is soul, and that soul reverses the testimony of the physical senses, and identifies all with spiritual ideas, soul. Soul identifies all with that which is of the nature of idea. It reverses human perception, physical testimony, and sensuous beliefs. Because the greater rules the lesser, the testimony of the physical senses must give place to the testimony of the spiritual senses. The climax of this subject is found in the statement, "Divine science, rising above physical theories, excludes matter, resolves things into thoughts, and replaces the objects of material sense with spiritual ideas." Science and Health 123:12-15. The text then changes quite definitely to a fourth subject, which reveals that God is principle, and that principle translates human theories back into the one principle of all sciences, principle. God is principle, and this principle is the principle of all sciences, which means that there is but one science. Human theories, doctrines, schools of thought recognize human beliefs and not principle as their basis. But ultimately they will have to give way to divine science, the one and only science. Human and material sciences are not backed by divine power. As we learn here, the center of scientific demonstration of the ever-operative divine principle lies in the superiority of spiritual power over physical power. Theology. In the subchapter, theology, we arrive at the fifth subject in our story. What Mrs. Eddy presents here is not essentially the system of her theology. She is really stating the revelation that God is life, and that life translates the resistance to the living Christ into an acceptance of a scientific, practical religion, life. Because life has a Christ, life is always expressing itself, and therefore breaks down any resistance to a living, practical religion. Your, my, or the world's resistance to the living Christ. It brings us to the point where we willingly accept the spirit of the Christ in our lives. This is a most wonderful subject. I seem to say this of each one, but that is the way one feels when one begins to grasp the story of the textbook as one's life story. Let me show you quickly how beautifully Mrs. Eddy built up this subject. She starts by querying whether Christian Science must come through the Christian churches and points out that the churches do not seem ready to receive it. She then gives 7 reasons why the spirit of the Christ is resisted and rejected. It is because people are not receptive in heart, because they like to worship materially instead of spiritually, because they are reluctant to unite Christianity with science, because they refuse to build their church on the Christ instead of on human personalities and organizations, because they are unwilling to follow the Christ and are prone to persecute, because they do not want to free themselves from ecclesiasticism and scholasticism, and finally, because they tend to turn the poor in spirit and the stranger, the progressive thinker, from the gate. The subject ends by summoning us to seek and welcome the whole Christ. When we ponder this section, theology, we can feel how the fact dawns on thought that God is life, and that therefore our resistance to the living Christ, to the incorporeal, inorganic, unorganized Christ, must break down. Medicine. The 6th subject covers the whole subchapter, medicine. It reveals that God is truth, and that truth translates the so-called healing power of matter, drugs, back into the one remedy of truth, truth. The main purpose of this subchapter is not to show the method of healing. That is the subject of the 12th chapter, Christian Science Practice. Before Mrs. Eddy can show us how to heal, she has first to make plain what the element of healing is, and this is the topic of this subchapter, medicine. Is your remedy a drug, or is it truth? What was revealed to Mrs. Eddy is the fact that truth is the one and only remedy, and that there are no remedial effects in drugs or material manipulations. It came to her that the only Savior is truth. This truth is the only remedy and heals through the medicine of mind, not through matter. This subject, too, has a wonderful build-up. It says, in short, material medicines are not real remedies because they take their so-called power only from human beliefs. Matter by itself has no power whatever to heal. Any belief in material medicine can be regarded as idolatry. Medical theories spring from human beliefs and have no divine principle. No wonder they tend rather to increase disease than to diminish it. Hence, drugs can never be considered as real remedies. They must finally yield their place to an understanding of divine science, which is the paramount and universal remedy for every ill. If your spiritual sense is cultured in the tones of the synonymous terms for God, such a build-up of a subject is really music to your ears. You will sense it in all 7 subtones. The subchapter medicine, the 6th subject, brings us to the end of the chapter. You may ask why there is no seventh subject. I have no satisfactory answer, and unless one comes through revelation, I feel it is better to leave it for the time being. Reviewing this whole chapter, we can to some degree assess the magnitude of what was revealed to Mrs. Eddy in 1866. The fundamental constituents of being broke on her thought, and she conceived the nature of God. This revelation was accompanied by the stupendous fact that this being has a Christ, and that this Christ is always translating God to man. When reading the text, we are overwhelmed by the sense of an irresistible power being exerted upon us, forcing us to give up the false constituents of existence. We also feel that it is all forever going on in spite of us. This is typically the standpoint of the Christ in its own office, the Christ reflecting the Christ. The dynamics of being are shown through the capacity of the Christ to affirm the positive and to translate, leaven, reverse, exchange, replace, and alter all that is negative. There is a great sense of an overturning and overturning until he come whose right it is. Ezekiel 21:27. One can almost feel Ezekiel's wheels within the wheels, turning, turning, and overturning. Notice how this sense of the translating power of the Christ, the translation of God to man, is brought out through the subject.